Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masterson. Today we'll examine a number of subjects and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and look into why Libya is not our fight with Edward Luttwak, who has served as a consultant to the Office of Secretary of Defense, the National Security Council, and the U.S. Department of State and branches of the military. Then we'll speak with one of the GE3 nuclear engineers who blew the whistle on GE in 1975 about design deficiencies on the boiling water Mark I reactor, the same one that has been melting down in Japan. Dale Breidenbaugh joins us. Then finally, we'll talk with Jeff Farmer, the chief organizer of the Teamsters Union, who visits us in the studio to talk about a revival in support for unions following the union bashing in Wisconsin and a major demonstration in downtown L.A. taking place on Saturday. Joining me now is Edward Luttwak, who is a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He has served as a consultant to the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the National Security Council, the U.S. Department of State, and branches of the military. He is the author of Strategy, The Logic of War and Peace. Welcome to Background Briefing, Edward Luttwak.
Hello.
And you had an article this week in the Los Angeles Times, Libya is not our fight. And I remember you being quite prescient about the Iraq war. You had objections to that intervention based upon the notion that we were taking out a secular leader and this would ultimately lead to a fundamentalist takeover of Iraq. And I think the picture, unfortunately, is pretty much that way. And as much as it looks like Iran was the winner of the Iraq war, Who do you think is going to be the winner of this war?
Well, I noticed that the demonstrations in Benghazi, the women were segregated from the men, and each and every one of them had a headscarf, and they were not allowed to march with the men. So I presume that whoever organized that particular demonstration that I happen to see has views about the future of Libya. And, not happy. But that's not the reason for my objection. The reason for my objection is that the war is, after all, not an easy thing. And we have a Secretary of Defense, his name is Mr. Gates, and he consulted his officials and he told President Obama that the United States should stay out of the Libyan affair. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Joint Chiefs get together, they know something about war too, and they said the United States should stay out. And then three people who are not experts in war, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, Susan Rice, Ambassador to the UN, and Samantha Powers of the National Security Council, very fine ladies, all the three ladies went to Obama and persuaded this most easily persuadable president to, yes, we'd get involved. Phase two was the meeting in Paris, where the French agreed to coordinate. Having agreed to coordinate, they then launched an air attack without coordination ahead of the agreed missile strike against the surface air missiles to open the way to air attacks. The next thing that happens is that having got the UN resolution that talks only about protecting civilians, we have the British and the French talking about removing Gaddafi, which is not included in the resolution. So in this welter of things, with the British, the French, and the three terrible women, all of them impinging on this, the Pentagon has fallen back on its Stalingrad fortress, which is no ground troops, and B, no U.S. command for this bloody mess. Because it is a bloody mess to have no troops on the ground, and yet the objective of removing Gaddafi. And, and the particular problem here is that we are not removing the far worse dictatorship of Bashar Assad in Syria. We are actively supporting the Khalifa family as it imposes its will on the majority of the population in Bahrain. And of course, we have done nothing about Yemen.
But I assume, Edward Luttwak, that one of the arguments that Hillary Clinton and the other two women had was that if the United States does not intervene when a dictator is killing his people using modern military equipment against his own civilian populations, that will give Bashar al-Assad and these other dictators a green light. Do you think that was an argument that was proffered?
That is a perfectly strong, it is perfectly good argument. And it is, however, based on a premise. And the premise is that the United States of America and the citizens of the United States of America and the taxpayers of the United States of America are responsible for the welfare of the Arab world and not the Arab League, which has hundreds of combat aircraft and, you know, at least 200,000 or 300,000 supposedly well-trained troops, and which in Egypt, member of Arab League Egypt, has the air bases right next door. And in Tunisia, indeed, also member of the Arab League, also has air bases next door. So, yes, somebody should do something about it. But Arab League having got itself together, all these nice, porky, fatty guys in their white robes and the rest of them deciding that we have somebody should help the Arabs of Libya, why not them?
Because, well, I suppose,
you know, if we're going to assume humanitarian responsibility, why don't we start in the Congo, where every day 1,000, perhaps hundreds of people get killed every day, much more than in Libya. So on humanitarian grounds, Libya is way down the list.
Well, arguably, the Egyptian military is pretty much in de facto control of the country and somewhat preoccupied.
Preoccupied, but I don't believe they're using the Egyptian Air Force at this time with their F-16s, which, you know, they have a completely idle Air Force. So why does an F-15, a U.S. Air Force F-15, have to fly out from Lakenheath base in England and fly right across Europe in order to operate over Libya and, by the way, fall out of the sky because of mechanical defect, when we have brand-new, nice F-16s next door in Egypt that could intervene without a perilous flight all the way across Western Europe? Why?
Well, might I suggest a certain hypocrisy on the part of these leaders that they're actually happy to have the U.S. do this?
Because they've already come out, half of them condemning the United States for having bombed Libya.
But nobody likes Gaddafi,
because,
right?
You know, the resolution said that these infidels should go and protect the Arabs of Libya, but they are not allowed to bomb Libya. So, and they're not allowed to attack the surface-to-air missiles and the air defense radar. Their thinking, of course, was that this way the Western air forces would fly over Libya, protect the civilians of Libya, and if one or two got shot down by surface-to-air missiles, a couple of infidel pilots died, so much the better. Anyway, this is nonsense. What happened is that President Obama was given an opinion by his civilian and his military advisors from the Defense Department. The advice was stay out, and then the three terrible women bounced him off that decision. Evidently, he's easily persuaded, and that is how we're involved. But right now, the problem is that unless Mr. Gaddafi decides to resign dedicate himself to poetry or fashion or something, then he will be in Tripoli and he won't be removed without a grand operation. And so we will see whether Mr. Sarkozy's enthusiasm extends that far.
But do you think, though, that the unstated subtext here is the removal of Gaddafi? Because that's the only thing that makes sense strategically.
Yes, you're quite right. And that is why, since there was no intention to invade one more Muslim country in order to change its government on the part of the Defense Department, that's why they were against intervention. And now they've been forced to intervene, but they said only the air operation, only to open the way for the others, and no troops on the ground. This is a line of defense. When you give good advice, your good advice gets rolled by fast-talking people, then you have to fall back on some minimum, and that's the minimum. And, you know, I don't know what's going on here. Perhaps the three ladies are jealous of Mr. Muammar Gaddafi's sense of fashion and the fact that he changes his clothes every time he appears. And so originally designs them himself, by the way. I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, we have two wars underway. We have an Iraq situation. And in Afghanistan, as you know, we're trying to reconstruct Afghanistan and turn it into something like Sweden and so on. We're spending approximately $7,000 million a month in Afghanistan. $7,000 million a month in Afghanistan. Now, already, we're spending hundreds of millions in Libya. What's the justification for it?
Well, I imagine the justification to going to the three ladies that you referenced, Edward Luttwak, is that all three, I believe, were haunted by what happened in Rwanda, Susan Rice being in the National Security Council at the time, Hillary Clinton being married to the president, who apparently this President Clinton's greatest regret is that he didn't intervene in Rwanda, and Samantha Power, of course, has written a book about genocide. So
that is very appropriate, and I share that. Because in Rwanda, a battalion of European troops, one battalion, would have stopped the massacre of 700,000. You know, if we are being humanitarian, let's count numbers. In Rwanda, there was a genocide that could have been stopped by introducing one battalion of troops. The moment you put in one European or American battalion, that's when the whole thing would have stopped. And that was not done. Something very easy, very fast, very cheap, very unrisky, very unweighted and unfreighted by Muslim stories and Islam and so on, was not done. So now we do this thing. But what are we going to do about Syria? Because just in the last week, the Bashar Assad dictatorship, which, by the way, has allowed no growth in Syria, unlike Mubarak in Egypt, because they steal everything, absolutely everything. The Bashar Assad dictatorship, A, they arrested 14, 15-year-old boys for writing the word, the dirty word, freedom, Huria in Arabic, Huria on the walls, freedom. They arrested them. Then when the parents came to demand the release, they shot at them. Then when they had the funeral, they shot at the funeral, okay? So that's the Bashar Assad government. If we want to, if humanitarian, our reasons are humanitarian, then let's go and immediately invade Syria. Much worse situation than Libya. Far worse.
Well, don't you think, though, Edward Luttwak, that ever since the Cold War, there has been, if you count the wars that we've had since the end of the Cold War, starting with President Bush Sr.'s intervention in Panama to arrest one criminal leader, Noriega, and there was some collateral damage of Panamanian citizens. Then Bush Sr. Had a war with a broad coalition against Saddam Hussein to remove him from Kuwait. Again, armies of the world arrayed against one criminal. Clinton had the same problem with the criminal Milosevic. I don't understand why it is that we can't come up with a mechanism that can arrest these criminal heads of states hiding behind sovereignty.
Yeah, excuse me, you're taking it as your starting point is that we must intervene.
You're looking for
a cheaper way to intervene.
No, I'm not. I don't believe that the U.S. should be the policeman, but I think if we have a thing called the International Criminal Court that's already preparing indictments against Libya.
The International Criminal Court. They are the ones we should send the 82nd Airborne to The Hague, Holland, arrest the International Criminal Court judges and lawyers, arrest them and lock them up for life. Because what they've done so far is that even in open and shut cases, like Charles Taylor case in Liberia, where he ate people and the rest of it, they managed to drag it out on Milosevic for years while running up million-dollar bills. And they drag it on for years, like the Arusha court for the Rwanda massacre goes on 7 years, 9 years, while they all charge thousands of dollars at the expense ultimately of the U.S. taxpayer, as well as the other countries contributing, and they have done nothing. Remember, the Milosevic trial was 3 years, and then he died before it was concluded. This international court has become a sovereign mechanism for fat lawyers to get fatter. They have absolutely failed. To this day, they have not convicted Charles Taylor, whose crimes were blatant. When he was dictator of Liberia, you may remember, in addition to murdering people, robbing people, mutilating people, and doing so blatantly and openly, and still the trial goes on and on and on, as these lawyers charge their $1,500 a day and ask for continuances and so on. So please do not invoke the International Court of Justice.
I wasn't invoking it. I was suggesting that there is a need for a mechanism, given the fact that the ICC is apparently going to indict Gaddafi, and they've already indicted Bashir.
These indictments and these trials are a farce.
Exactly.
Why does it take years to try Mr. Charles Taylor, who for all his sins and evils did them all in public up front with thousands of witnesses?
Right.
Looking at the Milosevic trial that lasted for years again with huge bills run up, or the Arusha trial where some hapless Rwandan teenager, they managed to drag out that trial for 7 years. Looking at that process, I would say that if Adolf Hitler were tried by the International Court of Justice at The Hague and its expensive lawyers, I believe the trial would last 30 years.
Well, clearly there's no defense for the ICC.
Yeah, there is no defense.
And that is
no mechanism.
I mentioned the Bashir being the head of state in Sudan. I'm asking you whether there is any way for a mechanism that is...
I'm afraid not. Right. Remember, Bashar of Sudan, the president of Sudan, is the one who was received by the NATO member called Turkey, because Turkey is still a member of NATO, received and embraced by Prime Minister Erdogan and President Gül, who then said that he must be innocent because Muslims do not commit massacres. That's what he said about Sudan. Okay? So let us realize what the situation is. The International Court of Justice doesn't work. This type of pretenses and hypocrisies, and the answer is stay out. Stay out.
And that means people are going to be massacred wholesale from Cote d'Ivoire.
People are going to be...
Congo.
I'm afraid that whenever there is a real one, you see, they always talk about this. They always say, oh, what about massacre and genocide? Whenever there's a real one, whether it's the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia or the Rwanda massacre, oh, back then, the Holocaust, or before that, the Armenian one. Whenever there is a true genocide and massacre, miraculously, nobody intervenes. These interventions always take place when there is a relatively handful of people who are being killed by somebody who happens to be unpopular. And in the case of Muammar Gaddafi, no doubt because of his extravagant clothes, which evoked the jealousy of the three ladies. I mean, I can't think of any other reason. Please count up the number of people been killed by Gaddafi since he assumed his dictatorship 40 years ago. There are a tiny fraction of the ones killed by the Assad dictator in Syria. So if we are humanitarian, we have to pay attention to this. How come nobody talks about intervening in the Congo, where hundreds of women get raped every day? If we are humanitarians, why? Is it because they're Africans, because they're blacks, they don't count? Only Arabs count?
Well,
what's this? I mean, if we are humanitarian, let us focus our interventions in Africa, where real numbers of people are getting killed.
Well, I would be in favor of that. I mean,
you'll be in favor of that. Good. So let us mount our operation in the Congo.
No, not the United States. I think
of saving dozens or... tens or something.
No, I think...
We have here created absurd presumptions. There was already a few days ago, somebody in Benghazi, a self-appointed leader or rather, already started being rather truculent and saying, well, you know, if the Americans don't intervene, we will have to, we'll take care of them, you know. When we come to power, we're going to punish them and something. You know, as if we're entitled. Anybody who dirties up his house can call you to clean it up. You know, people are supposed to fight for their own freedom. Let them do it. If there is a real genocide like Rwanda, yes, by all means. But somehow, miraculously, it never happens. When really big numbers of people getting killed, there's always a wonderful reason why we can't do anything.
So you have no hope in the sense that we're living in a more transparent world, that there is any power of moral suasion?
What do you mean transparent world? When the Arab League gets together, all these buffoons and dictators and fat kings get together, and they call on the world to intervene and help the Libyan population, when they themselves have the air bases next door and the aircraft and the troops, What's this? What's happened here is a presumption that somebody else, a.k.a. the United States, has to do the work. Why?
Well,
we have to break this presumption. I regard the Libyan intervention as a tragic, because it was the opportunity to stop this madness.
Well, but that would mean that the Gaddafi madness would continue.
And as I say, his continuation is not as egregious as the continuation of the Assad dictatorship of Syria.
Well,
you know, just because these television pretty faces are filming from Libya and not filming from Syria, it doesn't mean that the important... Nobody goes to the Congo, by the way. They don't go to the Congo for some reason. Hundreds of women get raped, thousands of people get killed, but the pretty faces of our television networks don't go there. As I say, you know, if somebody says that the Africans are black and therefore don't count, I mean, that's an argument. It's a racist argument, but it's, at least it's an argument. As of now, there is no argument. Well, I don't know what Samantha Powers and Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton argument would be of why we have to save the human beings of Libya and not the human beings of the Congo. Perhaps they'll say that they're blacks and don't count. So let them say it.
Well, Edward Luttwak, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Again, I've been speaking with Edward Luttwak, who is a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's the author of Strategy, The Logic of War and Peace, and he had an article this week in the Los Angeles Times, Libya, It's Not Our Fight. We'll take a brief station break and we'll be back with one of the GE3 designers who blew the whistle on the faulty reactors that are melting down in Japan.